Okay, thank you everyone for the February 7th, 2017 Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. Looking around, we do have a quorum. Member Donnelly and Member Shively are not here, but they let us know they wouldn't be. But we still have a quorum, so I'm going to call this meeting to order. And if we could, please have a moment of silence. Thank you, and rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, staff, are there any announcements or presentations today before we get started?
None that aren't on the agenda.
Okay. Members, you have any announcements you'd like to make? Okay, seeing none, the first order of business is to elect a chairperson and vice chairperson for 2017. So entertain any nominations for chair.
I'll nominate you.
Okay.
Chair again. I'd nominate John Diodati for chair.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any other nominations? All right. That's easy. Then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. That carries unanimously. And then for vice chair, do we have a nomination for vice chair?
Barbara. You want to all nominate?
Excellent.
Yeah, please.
Okay. I'll second that. Are you willing to entertain the vote?
Yes, I am. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. All right. So Barbara Spagnuolo for vice chair. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, that also carries unanimously. Moving on to public comment. So this is for items not on the agenda. 3 minutes if you'd like to come up and say anything that's not on the agenda. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Move on to our consent calendar. The first item is A1. That's the approval of our minutes from January 3rd. Any comments on the minutes? Richard.
Just on the last vote, I didn't vote on the chair. I just stayed silent.
You abstained? Okay. Do you have that for the minutes?
Yeah.
And you abstained just on chair, but you voted yes for Barbara?
Yeah.
Okay. No comments on the minutes. All right, public comment. Any comments on the minutes from our January meeting? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, good. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's also unanimous. Okay, moving quickly through this agenda. Two business items, and the first one is B1. This is a program status update from staff. So staff, I'll turn it over to you. I don't think the laptop's working, though, but I'm not sure if you need it for this one.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we didn't have a presentation prepared. I thought I'd briefly walk through the update. We completed the complete optimization.
Okay, I think it's on now. We completed, GSI actually completed optimization runs of the Lower Mora Valley groundwater model and provided an administrative draft of a report to us summarizing their modeling work. They're going to talk to you about this as part of item B2. They're going to present their findings and progress so far on the hydrogeologic work. We completed and released the request for proposals for engineering services for the water reclamation facility, lift station, and pipelines. So that was released. We have a pre-proposal meeting scheduled on Thursday at 10 o'clock with four potential proposers. It's non-mandatory, but it's an opportunity for them to get information about the project. We've updated the program schedule, as you'll see attached. We've completed an administrative draft alternatives evaluation for the master water reclamation plan. We've submitted that to city staff for review. We've worked with Bartle Wells Associates with development of a scope for updating their rate study, with given the findings from the facility master plan, and also it will incorporate the findings from the master water reclamation plan and the resulting directions from council. Regarding the program schedule update, We've had no changes to the critical path items or these major task items that we have on the table on the second page of our staff report. So the plan currently is still draft master water reclamation plan next month. Confirmation of the phase one and phase two water reclamation facility budgets. We anticipate that for council to consider in April. Council selection and award for the phase one WRF offsite improvements, the lift station and pipelines. That's the design contract for which we issued the RFP. That's anticipated for April as well. June, the request for qualifications for design and construction of the phase one WRF on-site improvements, so the actual work for the plant, is anticipated for June. Release of the public draft EIR, August, and then the actual RFP for the design build of the water reclamation facility is anticipated for October 2017. With the certification of the final EIR in November of this year, award of the contract for the phase one water reclamation facility on-site improvements scheduled for May 2018, and finally we're still on track for completion of the phase one water reclamation facility improvements by May 2021. So we've highlighted some items on the attached schedule to make it a little easier to see where the changes might be with the program schedule. Overall, none of these changes have affected any of those critical path items that we just discussed. The expanded groundwater modeling, that's some of the items under the master reclamation plan. That's actually been accelerated by GSI Water Solutions and is going to be completed 6 weeks before it was originally scheduled. So that work is significantly ahead of schedule. And so it allows us to incorporate more of those findings in our administrative draft master reclamation plan. The facility master plan team is completing visual simulations for the proposed lift station near the existing plant site. So that is still pending completion. That's going to just inform the design of the new lift station and will be applied, will be reviewed by the designers for the new lift station to kind of inform their process, and will also be incorporated in the final facility master plan. We've added the line item for the final facility master plan. This is something that had been anticipated, but we hadn't included in the schedule before as a discrete item. And the objective there is complete that after the EIR is certified, and that's per direction or recommendation from the city attorney, is that facility master plan be finaled after the EIR is completed. Items have been added for the rate study update. And then we've also... are waiting to start development of the bridging documents and performance criteria until after the program management scope amendment is reviewed and approved by council. So that item was pushed back, but it doesn't affect the procurement schedule for the design build. So at this point, I'll open to any questions you might have.
Go ahead, Richard.
Can you explain why we're hiring another consultant for a lift station?
So the RFP that's currently out is for someone to actually design the lift station to complete the construction documents for the lift station and the pipelines. So it's a separate effort from the facility master plan.
So Black and Veatch is not part of that?
They are eligible to propose on the design of it, but they completed the facility master plan, and that's kind of the end of their work on the lift station and pipelines.
Okay.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
I was wondering if the under item 111, final facility master plan, so if there are substantial changes, would that require recirculation of the environmental document, or are you planning a notification of changes? How will that process be handled?
That's a good question.
That's a good question. We're not sure where that goes yet. I mean, if the changes are minor,
It either takes the form of a staff report finding of conformance. If the changes are major to the point where it introduces new impacts or mitigation measures we hadn't anticipated, we might have to recirculate at that point, but we're not there yet.
Go for it.
Mike, on the rate study update, item 112, you are going to be incorporating some additional information you've learned to help more clearly state what the scope is to Bartles, correct?
I think you might be referring to the program management agreement.
Yes, right.
So the program management agreement, our work involving the rate study is what we're doing is separate from what they're doing. So we are developing different construction cost opinions and a range of construction costs and a range of O&M costs, so they can look at different alternatives in their rate study, but they're performing the rate study separate from us.
Okay. And in that new rate study, will we understand how much revenue has been generated to date from the previous set of five, annual increases? In other words, before you do a future rate study, it would appear that you would need to know exactly that how much revenue has been generated to date.
Yes, they'll take the city's financial information and incorporate that into their rate analysis too. They'll have a starting point of, cash on hand and projected earnings from the new rate, from the existing rates, and then not incorporate any additional rates that they don't need to do based on that existing revenue.
Because the original study obviously was an estimate of what needed to be generated over a five-year period. So it's almost like an update to the original one as well as a new one, which from a supplier's standpoint, you're better off having the same supplier do that work, sole source it, correct?
Yes, and they have the existing model. So it's plug in the numbers that Mike will be generating for the various alternatives.
Okay, that explains it. Thank you.
Just one question. So the rate study is just going to cover phase one, right? Just the water reclamation facility, not ancillary facilities, just the wastewater treatment plant, right?
It'll cover the water reclamation facility phases one and two. That's the current plan.
And two.
That's right. And different. There will be some different alternatives we'll look at. So it'll be some different, is the quote phase two, which we're now attempting to compress and put within 1 5-year schedule, could include exchange with agricultural users, could include indirect potable reuse. So we're going to have several different alternatives that we feed to that rate study consultant.
That's great.
But what it won't include and can't include is any ancillary facilities that are not part of the enterprise funds in that rate study. So for example, we've talked about the potential of moving the courtyard. That is a general fund cost that will have to be paid for out of the general fund, not through rates.
Okay.
Any other questions? I had two questions on the schedule. It looks like there's a line item for the LCP general plan amendment. So are we assuming we're going to pursue annexation at this point? And if so, is there a line item for LAFCO I'm not seeing?
Just to clarify, yeah, at this point the preferred path is to assume that annexation is part of that, and yes, that there's no line item there for LAFCO, but we're working with city staff through the general plan amendment update process to figure out the most efficient way to do that, because it may be that that's the more efficient path to get annexation and the sphere adjusted through the general plan update. If that's the case, then we wouldn't have to do that as a separate item here. The other option is to go through the county. We are going to be talking with county planning staff in the next couple of weeks to go through, mostly to give them an update about where things are at, but also get their feedback about if we went down that path, what would be involved to go down that path. So we're pursuing both, but we're really looking at a city annexation concept first.
So line item 158, that's 26 weeks for the amendments, incorporate some sort of LAFCO coordination or process if necessary. And then
excuse me, Mr. Chair, I just want to also say that through our planning department,
They're working on the general plan LCP update. They're already working with LAFCO on the SOI revision, sphere of influence revision that would include that area for potential annexation.
Good news. And then I also didn't see the CDP, any sort of hearings for the CDP. Are those in here anywhere that I'm just not seeing?
I'm not sure that they are in there explicitly, but we'll clarify that in there. It doesn't change. They'd be folded into the schedule we have, and I think it's just a question of calling those out.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to see those called out.
Okay.
Where they potentially fall. Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Any public comment on the program status update? Seeing none, I'm going to close this, and this is just a receive and file, so we'll do exactly that and move on to the next item now that we have a PowerPoint working. So this is item B2, the hydrological study update. I'll turn it over to you again, staff.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Paul Sorensen with GSI Water. He's going to present the just a progress update on the hydrogeologic work that's taken place over the last 8 months to a year regarding Mora Valley, Chora Valley, and then some very focused groundwater modeling in the lower Mora Valley. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Great. Thank you. My name is Paul Sorensen. I'm a principal hydrogeologist with GSI Water Solutions, project manager for the firm, and we're based in Atascadero. We've got staff in Atascadero, Santa Barbara, Ventura, Portland, Corvallis, Bend, but we're here local. Let's see. There it goes. It does work. I appreciate the opportunity here to present these materials, to talk with you all today regarding the course of the various studies that we've done over the last, over the last year and a half. An outline of today's presentation is shown. First of all, we're just going to discuss the overall objectives of the various studies that we've done. We're going to just talk about the key findings, just particularly as they relate to your interest here. We're going to talk about very quickly a couple of these of the specific studies that we performed. The Upper Moro Valley Reconnaissance Investigation, which you actually have heard before, but we'll just touch on that real briefly. The Moro Valley Feasibility Alternative Study, and then the Chora Valley Feasibility Alternative Study. And then lastly, we'll talk about the lower Moro Valley, and I'll define what that means, screening level groundwater modeling to look at the feasibility of an injection recovery program, and I'll get into the details of that. A brief, first of all, the overall objectives of the studies are several. And include a need to assess the best approaches to water reclamation from a geologic, hydrogeologic perspective. The objective, additionally, is to provide support to the master reclamation plan. It's to estimate the benefit to the city's water supply for these projects. The overall goal all along has been to enhance the city's water supply through these studies or through these evaluations. Another objective is to increase the water supply options that the city has and the flexibility of the water supply, and then cost-effectively reuse the treated, recycled water out of the plant. And then finally is a evaluation to feasibly recharge groundwater or to feasibly reuse that water in conjunction with the groundwater. So a brief recap of the conclusions of the various studies that we conducted are summarized very briefly right here. in very broad terms, and I'll get into more details in each one of these studies. But generally, we concluded that the feasibility of developing a water reuse project in Upper Moro Valley that meets the objectives of the city, as I just outlined, are relatively poor. From a technical perspective, there are options in Choro Valley that could conceivably work, but there are some significant obstacles that would have to be overcome as well. And I'll go into some of those. However, in Lower Moro Valley, the concept of developing a injection and recovery project is considered technically feasible, and I'll review each one of those in more detail here. So in late 2015, we conducted an analysis, a pretty detailed analysis of the geologic and hydrogeologic setting of Upper Moro Valley. One year ago, and in fact, it was on February 2nd of 2016, I was before your committee to present the findings of those studies to you. So I'm not going to spend any real time discussing that study again. But for your reference and as a reminder, I've just put up this one slide just as a one of the many graphics that we presented a year ago. The objectives of the study were to conduct a detailed geologic study of the valley, of the upper part of the valley, basically above Highway 1, essentially, or above, well, we looked at the entire valley, but the real objective was looking above Highway 1. We looked at well logs throughout the valley, drew several cross sections along and across the valley. If you may remember that these we drew cross sections along each one of these lines, both down valley and then across valley, looking at utilizing well logs and known geologic information to create a whole series of these cross sections. The red, again, just for review, the red showing the predominance of clays and fine-grained materials throughout the valley, the yellow representing sand, more sandy conditions and coarse-grained materials in the valley. And the results of the study concluded that it was infeasible to develop a recharge and recovery program in the valley because the valley is interbedded with fine-grained materials that really will impede or retard vertical percolation of the water and inhibit recharge of the aquifer materials throughout the valley, particularly the upper part of the valley. So development of percolation ponds appear infeasible in the valley. The potential for recharge by injection wells is also limited, very limited, because of the lateral extent of these sand-rich, high transmissive or highly conductive zones that we could see in the cross-sections. And so the available storage, the availability of area to put that water through injection wells is limited. And we concluded that the only part of the valley that might be feasible to develop some recharge facilities is the far westernmost part of the valley, just above the narrows. Even that was limited, and we'll go into that a little bit with the results of the modeling study here in a minute. So we then took a step back, so to speak, or maybe not a step back, but a step up, and looked at the whole valley system from 30 miles up, so to speak, and through the performance of a screening level feasibility alternative study of Moro Valley, to look at a wide range of alternatives. The various alternatives that we looked at was number one, ground. Oops, I'm sorry, I'm pushing the wrong button. I obviously pushed the wrong button too hard. We looked at groundwater recharge in the valley through infiltration basins, that being the development of an active recharge mechanism somewhere in the upper valley, most likely through infiltration basins, but also potentially through injection wells, and then pick up the water that we injected up valley, pick up the water downstream in the city's wells down west of Highway 1 in Kaiser Park and elsewhere west of Highway 1. The in-lieu recharge concept is a concept whereby we would provide treated, recycled water to directly to the growers in the valley in exchange for them agreeing not to pump groundwater. The concept there is that the reduced pumping by the growers would then result in more available groundwater in the city's wells downstream. The injection and recovery concept near the city wells is a concept that was subsequently studied in detail, so I won't get into that right now, but I'll do that near the end of the presentation here. Development of an injection well field here near the coastline for the purpose of creating a seawater intrusion barrier would conceivably allow the city to pump your existing well field harder and throughout dry periods without inducing seawater intrusion and degradation of the water quality in your wells. And we looked at that somewhat. We'll describe that a little bit with respect to the results of this modeling study that we did down there as well. Another concept is to sell the treated water directly to growers. Another alternative is to simply continue use of the city's brine disposal pipeline. And then lastly is a concept of what we call a riparian rights agreement with the agricultural users in the valley. In the upper valley, whereby we would provide water directly to the irrigators in exchange for the right to pump their own water through the city wells. And I'll talk about that in a minute as well. For each one of these alternatives, we looked at a whole series of factors, which I've listed here. We looked at, in order to evaluate the feasibility of each one of those alternatives, we looked at, how much of the effluent could we manage in that concept, the net water supply to the benefit. We looked at regulatory and permitting constraints of each one of the alternatives and whether, just the framework around which we would be required to develop cooperation agreements or legal framework for each one of those alternatives. We looked at seasonal constraints, particularly with respect to some concept where the ag users would be utilizing the water. Obviously, there are seasonal constraints because just by nature of the ag industry. Obviously, there are water rights issues that have to be addressed, environmental impacts, water quality impacts, and then we looked just in general in capital and O&M costs, just strictly relatively. We didn't develop any specific costs for any of the programs. So the results of that screening level feasibility study concluded that groundwater recharge through an active surface infiltration basin facility or system was not feasible for many reasons, but primarily because of the nature of the alluvial materials in the upper part of the valley. Just as simply as too fine-grained and not enough coarse-grained materials and available storage within the upper valley to hold the water and allow for not only infiltration or injection, but also extraction. It's just simply not feasible. In-lieu recharge is generally not feasible because of a number of issues, complicated water rights issues to do that, an apparent lack of benefit to the growers in the valley in many respects, and only a limited, if any, benefit to the city's water supply. And that's, in concept, an in-lieu program is as feasible and as positive a concept as there is in these types of conjunctive use projects. But in this instance, in this situation, with the number of users throughout the up and down the valley, it just doesn't appear like there would be a significant enhancement or significant increase in supply to the city's water supply. And really, it would benefit the city. It wouldn't be a real benefit to the city other than to dispose of the reuse water, which is not really your objective here. We concluded for the various reasons that I've discussed, we concluded that this injection and recovery at the city wells concept was potentially feasible, and so it certainly warranted additional study. And again, I'm going to talk about that in more detail. The injection for seawater intrusion barrier, I'm going to talk about that just a little bit. It warrants some additional study. Sale of water directly to the growers, it's technically possible, but certainly had some limitations and constraints because of a likely lack of benefit to the city's water supply, which again was one of our overall objectives to the studies. There are some possible benefits to a limited exchange with certain parties, however, and so that alternative is going to be explored in more detail in the master water reclamation plan. Continued use of the city's brine disposal pipeline, again, it's certainly feasible. Technically, it's feasible, likely the least expensive alternative, but there's no benefit to the city's water supply. And then lastly, the riparian rights agreement with ag users is again, it's considered to be technically feasible, but there are potentially some severe limitations with water rights issues. There's some water rights concerns, a large and expensive institutional and legal framework, and then obviously some real severe seasonality limitations. And so it was not as attractive as some of the others as well. So we went to Chorro Valley and did the same screening level feasibility investigation of Chorro Valley by looking at a similar set of alternatives and screening factors as we did in Moro Valley. And again, we concluded that the active recharge program, groundwater recharge program through infiltration basins and possible injection wells, was not feasible. And again, primarily because of the geology and the nature of the materials in the valley. An in-lieu recharge program, again, technically is feasible, but certainly much less attractive than a facility in Moro Valley. There's a number of obstacles to an in-lieu recharge program, so we discounted the alternative as a less attractive option. And then lastly, an injection and recovery program at the city wells in Chorro Valley was not feasible because of the permitting constraints and issues, limitations of water quality, and several other things. And these are all described in our summary reports that you will be provided. So now let's turn to the Lower Moro Valley modeling project for purposes of evaluating the feasibility of an indirect potable reuse or IPR project program. The objectives of the study was to use the model as a screening level tool to assess the feasibility of injection of the treated water and subsequent recovery of the recycled water, with the overall consideration, of course, to develop a cost-effective enhancement of the city's water supply. The goal was to inject up to 825 acre feet a year of recycled water into the aquifer. And maximize the city's production from the existing well field without, and this is key, without inducing seawater intrusion, recognizing that the city has an existing license to pump up to 581 acre feet a year out of the city well field. A further consideration for use of the model is to estimate the travel time or the residence time of the injected water. And this is actually an important consideration in order to meet Title 22 minimum residence time requirements. The minimum allowable residence or response retention time is 2 months. In other words, if you put this treated water, highly treated water, into the ground, it has to remain in the ground for at least two months before being extracted for use. But by the regulations, if a groundwater model is used to estimate that residence time, then a safety factor of 2 is required. So for modeling purposes, we wanted to see if the residence time could be 4 months. And I'll talk about that in a little bit when we get to the results as well. The study area is a little bit washed out here, isn't it? Obviously, you know, the main part of the city, Highway 1, the proposed new site. So here's Morrow Valley, the Narrows right here where there's a natural constriction to the valley, to the alluvial part of the valley. And so the portion that we modeled is this downstream part of Morrow Valley from the Narrows west, southwest, west of the Narrows and down into the lower Morrow Valley. Hopefully the rest of them won't be quite so washed out. Thank you. They're quite so blank. And the scenarios, the different scenarios that we evaluated includes 1A and 1B, I'll get into that, that evaluated recycled water injection up gradient of the city's wells. In other words, we put the water up gradient in the vicinity of the Narrows, up gradient of the city's wells. Scenarios 2 and 2A and 2B, we looked at injecting the water down gradient of the city's wells, basically between the city extraction wells, production wells, and the ocean. So there's an awful lot of technical detail in this, but I wanted to show it not to overwhelm you with details and technical information, but to just simply show you the nature of the modeling that we did here. Again, I pushed the wrong button again. Again, here's the Narrows, and the scenarios 1A and 1B looked at, we called these 1A and 1B. We ran tens of scenarios, but it boiled down to this. 1A and 1B looked at injecting the 825 acre feet a year, or up to 825 acre feet a year in injection wells here, just below the Narrows, upstream of the city wells, which are located here. So 1A essentially looked at this injection well configuration using the existing city wells. And then in scenario 1B, we added a new production well that doesn't currently exist, but a new production well along the bike path down here to try and capture some of this water that would be coming down this direction. I won't go into the details, but as you review the report, when you see it, is that the different colors and the flow paths of these lines here does show the direction of flow and the flow path, as well as the time retention of the injected water. These yellowish, goldish lines are also part of a particle tracking component to the model that we used to evaluate the potential for seawater intrusion. And what these show is we put in a whole series of theoretical monitoring wells along the coast here. And what these lines show is over a period of 40-some years that the particles would still be flowing out towards the ocean. And in other words, this scenario shows that we would not be getting seawater intrusion as a part of this scenario. And the conclusions of that I'll get into here. Scenario two was, again, we're looking at use of the city wells for recovering the water. But here, instead of putting our injection wells up here by the narrows, we put them down here south of the city wells, essentially between the production wells and the ocean, and looked at how much water we could inject as well as recover with this kind of a configuration. And the results of the modeling scenarios show that in scenario 1A, which is, again, injecting the water up gradient of the city wells in the vicinity of the narrows, extracting the water at the city wells 1, 2, the Flippo's well, and the two high school wells, we estimate we could put in 825 acre feet a year into the aquifer. We would be able to extract up to 943, in the range of 900 to 950 acre feet a year. The residence time would be greater than 4 months, and there's limited to no potential for seawater intrusion with that configuration and at these rates. Scenario 1B is the same as scenario 1A, except we put in that new well along the bike path. Put in the same volume of water in injection, but with that new well, we're able to, to pump quite a bit more water, approximately 1,200 acre feet a year. We have a problem with the residence time. Now, the particle tracking estimates appear to estimate that it would be mostly greater than 4 months, but there some of the results were slightly less than 4 months. And indeed, here there's a moderate potential for seawater intrusion, particularly in the dry months or dry years of limited rainfall. Scenario two, again, with down gradient injection, we move the injection wells south of the wells, pumping it at the existing city wells. We were not able to put quite as much water into the ground under this configuration, although we could pump more water than up here in 1A. But it appears as if the residence time would be limited in that kind of configuration, or it would be a limitation in that kind of a configuration. Looks like it'd be more than 3, but less than 4 months, just from the modeling results. So that would have to be dealt with, but again, pretty limited opportunity or potential for seawater intrusion. 2B looked at the same thing as 2A with the downgrading injection configuration, but adding another pumping well there at the what's called the Flippo's well. We got a little bit more water into the ground, a little bit more production out of this well configuration. But again, we had the same considerations and potential problem with the residence time. But in this scenario, we had a very high potential for seawater intrusion. So our conclusions are that the concept is feasible with respect to the ability to inject the water into the aquifer. It shows that we can get 800 to 825 acre feet of a year of recycled water into the aquifer with a minimum of 4 new injection wells. With respect to groundwater pumping or the recovery or extraction side of the project, the concept. Model shows that we could pump up to about 1,200 acre-feet a year of water without inducing seawater intrusion, depending on the configuration of the wells. It only makes sense. I guess intuitively, the model also showed that the potential for seawater intrusion increases with the higher production volumes. The more we pump, the higher the potential for seawater intrusion. What these results show, what the last slide and this one show, is that the city would not be able to fully exercise its existing right to pump 581 acre-feet a year plus the entire volume of injection water of 825 acre-feet a year. But, I mean, you know, that adds up to, what, 1,406 acre-feet a year. But we're looking at a concept here that would be able to pump significantly more, in other words, 1,200 acre-feet a year, significantly more with this configuration and facility than would otherwise be possible without a project at all. With respect to the residence time, the model shows that minimum residence time of the injected water could likely be met, although it would be close. It appears that the two-month minimum residence time is not a problem to meet, but it could be problematic if we count on using the model to obtain the permits. And so, you know, it's likely that we would be required to do some additional testing and in the field testing demonstration of the residence time in order to obtain the permits to implement this project. So finally, our conclusions. Upper Moro Valley, use of the Upper Moro Valley for a various concepts and projects, alternatives, is simply not feasible to look up valley. Choro Valley, there's some potentially feasible alternatives, but some significant obstacles and less attractive than the Lower Moro Valley injection recovery concept, which certainly appears to be feasible. And lastly, our recommendations would be to obviously to use this analysis to help evaluate the reuse options in the master plan. This will help inform that process going forward. We will need to meet with DDW and the Division of Drinking Water, the state division, and the Regional Water Quality Control Board in order to discuss the residence time issues. We recommend that some pilot injection program be developed and implemented to study some of these constraints or uncertainties that we identified in the study. And then, you know, those studies, that injection program or the pilot program and additional data needs would include some seawater intrusion monitoring and some groundwater monitoring devices and some stream flow measurements. But that's all done as part of the program. And with that, I conclude my presentation and certainly would be open to questions.
I'm sure we have a bunch. So I will look around and see who would like to go first.
I start on that, sir.
Okay. Richard, do you have any questions about the presentation?
Yeah, a couple. Regarding the permitting for the injection wells into Lower Moro Valley, have you looked at, you know, for the two-month retention times, have you looked at the data from, we had at one time like 68 MTBE monitoring wells for that area during the MTBE analysis and plume. Could that data be used to help get a more accurate, you know, retention time and streamline the permitting process for the regional board?
We did look at that data. In fact, coincidentally enough, One of the senior modelers that worked on this program, on this project, back in the day of the MTBE, he was a consultant that developed the groundwater model for that whole process. So we did look at that data. We did utilize that in this model. It has limited to no value with respect to trying to streamline the permitting process for the residence time estimations, though. Partly because of the location of the most of those wells, you know, up along Highway 1, whereas most of our real uncertainties lies further to the west. The travel time, you know, the depth of those wells is another difference in this concept versus the depth of the monitoring wells that were put in for the MTBE studies. Again, in short answer, yes, we looked at that. We've evaluated that as part of this study, but the value of that data and those wells are very limited with respect to helping us with the permitting issue.
Okay, and then regarding the saltwater intrusion, what data are you using for sea level rise at this time for estimating that? Because recently in California, they were severely underestimating what those numbers were, and they're updating them.
As we speak, obviously sea level rise will affect all of these concepts. We, as a screening level feasibility analysis, we didn't factor that in. You know, we're looking at, will the concept even work?
No. Okay.
And so the modeling didn't factor in a sea level rise. We did within the model. We looked at all instances where if water levels came up to a certain elevation below ground or a certain depth below ground surface, the model would shut the water injection off, and that, you know, that, but as far as the sea level rise and what it may look like 50 years or 100 years or 200 years from now, we didn't 20 years from now, we didn't factor that into this level of investigation.
And then the other question I have, you mentioned the city's brine disposal pipeline. What is that?
I think he's referring to the wastewater treatment plant outfall. So we should.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Legally a brine disposal line.
That's
right,
correct.
Now.
The reason that terminology is in the presentation, is not in the draft reports, is because the plan is in the future that ocean outfall becomes a brine disposal pipeline. So we'll get that.
Yeah. I apologize for that.
Comment.
Thanks,
Mark. I appreciate you noting that.
So I have a question. It appears that there's, in regards to reuse for agriculture, the only thing that is potentially on the table is sale of water to growers, and it sounds like in a limited exchange with some, but in regards to in lieu and riparian rights agreement, those are basically off the table because of the complexities that are involved.
Yes.
Doing that. So it appears that you have a couple of growers in mind that might be interested, or you have some locations where it would potentially be to both the growers' benefit and the city's benefit.
Yeah. I'm going to let Mike.
When you mentioned that you have a limited, potential limited exchange with some.
We are talking to some potential agriculture users who've expressed some interest, and we're working on what specifically those alternatives could look like. So there are a couple that we're talking with, and some of those concepts will be in that master water reclamation plan.
You can keep going.
Well, I guess what I'm concerned about is the water's flowing now, but, you know, as time goes on, they're going to be back in the same situation that they were just last year in regards to a number of the growers not being able to, I mean, cutting down their trees and stumping them. And, you know, what's the realistic picture going to be out there in the valley? We can't get...
I'm going to ask John. John may be able to speak. He had fairly broad outreach to a lot of residents in the valley. Are a lot of growers.
The kind of feedback we got was along the lines of, and of course we didn't actually talk to everybody, but was, yeah, we're conceptually interested in the idea of water if we can get it. We don't pay very much for our water right now, and if we had to pay a whole lot more for our water, we're not really that interested. There were variations on that theme. The question when raised, well, would you take water and commit to not pumping the water you have so that there's a net benefit supply? That wasn't met very receptively. So the general feedback is variations of not too receptive. We don't want to pay more than we're paying now. We would do it, you know, in a pinch if we needed the water. Some sort of said if we really needed the water, we'd consider some options. But for those who have water or think they'll have water for their needs, not a whole lot of traction so far.
Is there the potential for increasing well depth? And or are they pretty much at their maximum depth that they can go?
Yeah, I can address that. Yeah.
I mean, for the farmers, or the growers, rather.
Yeah, in any one instance, what I'm about to say may be incorrect, but generally, for the most part out there, all of the growers, all of the farmers have drilled to the base of the alluvium, in other words, to the base of the productive aquifer. So they're fully utilizing the aquifer and fully withdrawing as much as they can. And in fact, the bulk of the largest volume of water really is at the base of that aquifer, and so they're all going right to the bottom. So, you know, so to get to your question directly, there's virtually no opportunity to drill deeper and to get more water that way. You're shaking your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There have been people that have gone below.
Right. Yeah, there's, you know, it's good luck to go deeper, but there's virtually no water in that underlying bedrock basement.
You can continue with your questions if you'd like.
Well, I guess so there's the potential that if we were to go back to this dry spell, that maybe would the growers still be able to produce? I mean, are they going to have water? And are we precluding an opportunity?
Are we precluding an opportunity to help the growers with their water supply?
Not that should be our goal. I mean, our goal is to enhance the city wells and have water for the city. But it sounds like it's kind of black and white in some ways.
Some of what we're looking at in the Master Water Reclamation Plan, and some of to make it mutually beneficial to the city and also the user, we need to have either several users clustered together so we're not building as much pipeline, or we need to have one or two very large users that can take a lot of the water, and then have the ability to have contracts with 20, 30 plus year duration, so both sides agree to the long-term delivery and receipt of that water. So we are exploring that in the master reclamation plan. We have a number of different alternatives we're going to present in that. Some are related to urban irrigation, so delivery to some parks and the golf course over in Chora Valley and some different users there. Some are related to agricultural exchange, where we would have a contract with one particular agricultural user. They might provide water back to the city. from their wells farther up in the valley, for example. So we're looking at a number of those alternatives. But, I mean, your comment is, I think what we saw with this latest drought is, and Dale can speak to this better than anybody else, is, you know, we did see a lot of folks really impacted by the drought conditions in that upper part of the aquifer in particular.
Yeah, go for it.
So following up what you just said, John, if this report then just basically looked at injection, there are going to be some other opportunities. Like, for example, when you discussed the Chorro Valley, I was a little disappointed because I was hoping that we would have kind of a positive impact mm-hmm. on the Morro Bay estuary. But it sounds like that's not feasible given the geology of the area. So then I would look to if we can enhance streams or... Are we going to be looking into things like that?
So we've explored the stream enhancement somewhat with the work that Larry Walker did about a year and a half or so ago. Some of the challenges with the stream enhancement are once you put that water in the stream, very difficult to pull it out. City of San Luis Obispo is
I remember that, but I was hoping that the regulations might be changing.
We haven't seen any evidence of that. The other issue, too, is you have very stringent water quality requirements mm-hmm. for that. Salt limits, a lot of things that you know, make that treatment very expensive. And then the bigger concern is once you've created that environmental demand, you really have to continue to meet that environmental demand.
Right.
So those are issues that, you know, we didn't see the stream flows having a long-term water supply benefit to the city for those reasons.
And I think that's an important point that Mike just ended on. There's a lot of things you can do with the water that might benefit somebody or something. But the overarching goal here is to benefit the city's water supply in some fashion. So that's the lens through which we're looking at everything here.
Yeah, I understand that. And then the only other question that I had was for the follow-up work that you had proposed. Has that been integrated into the schedule that we just saw today?
Not yet. We'll need direction from council after the master water reclamation plan is completed, after the cost opinions are available. That work can easily proceed concurrent with the other activities that are anticipated for the phase one, what we call currently phase one, the water reclamation facility design documents and the procurement in that process. That work can easily proceed with that. Really, the critical path on any of this is getting a water reclamation facility built mm-hmm. at the South Bay Boulevard site. All this work can proceed in parallel to that.
So if you had to rank that whole list of things that you proposed, and assuming that, let's say, we had some budgetary concerns, what would you rank as your top two things to go forward with for additional studies?
Well, aside from the planning side that I leave to these gentlemen, you know, from the geology and hydrogeology, probably the two most significant or kind of critical path to eventual development of this injection recovery program would be getting together with DDW and the Regional Water Quality Control Board, number one, and number two would be a pilot program or just some controlled, focused testing of injection and recovery and with controlled monitoring well observation and so on. So it would be, you know, some field intensive work.
And the consultation with DDW and Regional Water Quality Control Board, we're planning on plenty of consultation with those agencies anyway. And that's not a big cost item, of course.
Yeah, it's not a big cost item. And again, that's part of, you know, what these gentlemen are doing as well. But just to bring that additional item of discussion in would be most important from our standpoint of looking at this concept as a feasible program going forward. And again, that's predominantly just with respect to the residence time. Technically, again, it's feasible, but can we make this program work and meet the residence time requirements of Division of Drinking Water?
Thank you.
And I think it's also important, and these are all great questions, many of which are going to be answered a lot more clearly when you see the master reclamation plan coming out. What this does, though, what Paul's doing, is provide a glimpse, a snapshot into some technical issues that you can start preparing your mind to grasp as that whole report comes out as well.
Is it in the city's benefit to wheel off some of this water for the Morro Bay Golf Course in anticipation of them receiving less from CMC?
What I would say is I don't know if it would necessarily benefit the city.
The city.
But the golf course has expressed interest and has stated how much they'd be interested in receiving. And so part of that, we are looking at them specifically as a possible user in the master water reclamation plan.
Dale.
Are we going to get a copy of this report?
Yes, you will. We have an internal draft we're reviewing now. We wanted to give you a taste of what's happening, give you a progress report. Our goal is to have the, I would say we'd probably have a public release draft later this month. Should I have our comments together the next week or so?
Barbara, any questions?
Yes, when you talk about some of these things like your recommendations or pilot injection program, what's the time length on that and how does that impact? I know you said it could be done concurrently, but when would you be asking us for some kind of recommendation?
I would say the point at which we'll be asking for recommendation is when we get through the Master Water Reclamation Plan in March and April. And really the goal is to have better project definement and direction from council in the April time frame.
So that you could better define the scope of this study and limit the cost. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I have a couple questions. One, on the Master Water Reclamation Plan, it looks like, if I understand this right, 2/3 to 3/4 of the annual production from the plant could end up down here. So, you know, a quarter to a third of water available. And if we're putting pipelines all the way there, is the plan going to look at the balance of that potentially for irrigation? Because the pipeline would be passing the golf course, it would be passing the schools, a couple parks.
Yeah, that's correct. Part of what we'll do, so one thing that happens is some of the water that gets, there are different points where we, quote, lose water, if you will, along the way. So we've estimated we'll lose 20 to 25% of the influent wastewater coming into the plant through brine. Even if we use reverse osmosis on that water to meet the regulatory requirements for indirect potable reuse, we lose some water there. When we extract the water out down at the Morro Bay Water Plant, we also have, your recovery there is 85%, somewhere in that neighborhood at the water plant. So you have points where you lose some of that water along the way. What I would say is whatever water we can't put in the ground, you would definitely look at other uses along the way that might be convenient to those pipelines. And that's part of what we'll look at in that study.
Okay.
Is there maybe some hybrid mm-hmm. approaches where you have some water going a few different directions.
Okay. And Paul, good report. Question for you. If we were to eject 100% of the water there, would we see daylighting or would it otherwise be lost to the ocean? Is that an alternative for in lieu of finding other sources or until we find other sources of putting the water?
Well, a couple of things there. We didn't attempt to model injecting more than that 825. That was provided to us as kind of a cap mm-hmm. just for the things that Mike just described, number one. Number two, do you want me to speculate?
Sure.
I'm a geologist. I hate to do that. You know? We would start. I think eventually we would start seeing some flooding or daylighting, as you say. We would lose more and more to the ocean, and at some point there would be a loss of benefit. But that's
okay.
Without the benefit of the modeling right now.
Okay. And then one final question, Rob, for for Rob Leivick down there. Is there going to be a chapter or a discussion on direct potable reuse in the plan, or is that way too far out in the future?
There's a section in the facility master plan that does talk about direct potable reuse, and we'll briefly touch on it in the master water reclamation plan. But currently it's not legal, so a lot of that is speculative.
Gotcha.
But we did, I think Flagon Beach did a nice job looking at where the regulations appear to be going, what the requirements might be, and some of that will be reflected in the master water reclamation plan.
Okay. Well, thanks, Paul. We look forward to seeing the report. Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you.
Any public comment on the presentation or related to this topic? All right. Seeing none, this is also just receive and file and provide comments, which we did. So wrap up this item and move on to committee member closing comments. And I do know that we're going to try to fit in some subcommittee updates here. So, Jenny, did you want to go first?
Sure. I just had a couple of brief items. For those people that were interested in what's going on with the Cayucos plant, just that there's going to be a town hall meeting on Thursday. That's 2 days from now at 6 o'clock at the Cayucos Elementary School. And the discussions are going to include presentation from design and construction team, environmental highlights, projected cost, and available financing and rate increase process, the Prop 218 process. The other thing I wanted to mention is I have an update, and I've already provided this information to, is this on? To Rob and to Mike, but I have an update on US EPA's Water Infrastructure and Resiliency Finance Center. And basically, I provided them a press release regarding the availability of $1 billion in loans from EPA or water infrastructure projects. So I know some people are wondering what's going to happen politically with EPA in the near future, because there's been rumors that there might be some cutbacks. But since we don't know what's going to happen, I would suggest moving ahead and at a minimum provide, you know, the letter that they had recommended. What's interesting about their program is it provides long-term low-cost credit assistance in the form of direct loans and loan guarantees to creditworthy water projects. So this is an option on top of, for financing large infrastructure projects, that is anything over $20 million, which we qualify for, and also because we're a municipality. But that's in addition to state revolving funds and bond market. So EPA is estimating that the funds appropriated to the WIFIA project or program could be leveraged at a ratio greater than 50-1. And so what all that means is that the $17 million program budget that EPA currently has could make it $100 billion in loans and stimulate about $2 billion in total infrastructure investment. So as I mentioned, what EPA is looking for right now is simply a letter of interest, and I have a copy of the instructions for that. It's pretty straightforward. You just have to demonstrate, you know, the WRF's eligibility, financial creditworthiness, engineering feasibility, and we have a lot of this information already. And then finally, the alignment with EPA's policy priorities. But this is due by April 10th. So it would be a nice placeholder, and I would highly recommend that at a minimum we get that information out there. That's it.
Do you mind repeating the meeting time, because your microphone wasn't on when you talked about
okay.
The Cayucos meeting?
Sure, sorry about that. So for the Cayucos Sustainable Water Project, an update on that, there's going to be a town hall meeting on Thursday, February 9th at 6 p.m. at the Cayucos Elementary School.
Thank you. Dale, any announcements or?
Just want to thank Paul for your report. Thank you. It was good.
Comments? Thank you.
Okay. Destruction, any closing comments? Jenny? Or sorry, Barbara.
That's okay. Just for the next agenda item, Are we going to have, will we have the budget report update for the last quarter of 2016?
Yes, we will. So we're going to provide that to the City Finance Department this week, and we also would like to provide it to the Finance Subcommittee.
Okay.
Our goal is to do that. I believe we're looking at the 17th to provide that to you all. I'd give you a week, if that'd be okay, to review, provide comments back to us. It'd be very helpful.
Okay.
In anticipation of that meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Recently, I sent a couple of the board members a document called the City of Morro Bay's Collection System Condition as it relates to the WRF. Specifically, it kind of, on section 3.0 of the draft master plan, it kind of addresses some of the issues that I've been mentioning about capacity for the last few years. I would like to make sure that staff gets that to the rest of the board. If that, I have a PDF, or you could get on the website that I created. It's called www.morrobaywrf.info and get and click on collections, and the report is on there. That's www.morrobaywrf.info, and it's under the collections section. Basically, what in summary, what this shows is that the inflow and infiltration rates and exfiltration rates are severely underestimated by the way we're looking at things. For example, in 2001, it was a wet year preceded that, we had actually treated more water at the wastewater treatment plant than the city used. So that kind of gives you a hint at the condition of what we're dealing with here. So I would like to maybe even in the future have like a discussion item so we can discuss this, because this is kind of, for me, the gorilla in the room here is that if we don't build this plant and size it properly, then we're going to have an issue. The second second issue that I have is I recently attended the 2017 California Climate Change Symposium, and you know, I'm really happy I'm living in California because we're science-based and we're moving in the right direction in that, regardless of what Washington's doing. And one of the major things is AB 32 and the greenhouse gas sequestration and carbon market. And, you know, to date, all I've been getting from the different consultants is that we're not there yet. Well, California is already there. We need to be there as well. And one of the biggest problems that we're having here is dealing with just the energy, you know, just to give people an idea of what we're talking about here. The lift station that we're going to be building is going to, I'm told by an expert, a friend of mine in here, about 5 to 6 times the energy that we currently use at the plant just to pump all that sewage up there. So I would suggest that if people get on that website, you can get some ideas. Thanks.
Okay. And with that, we're going to adjourn. And we're back at the Vets Hall in March. That is March 7th, 2017, 209 Surf Street at 3 p.m. See you all there. Thank you.
John, here's a belated congratulations. I read in the paper...